This is Jess Explores. I'm Jess, and I work in MARE, the SFI Research Center for Energy, Climate, and Marine. Join me today on a new episode of Jess Explores. It is time that we address marine ecosystems and marine ecosystem services. When we talk about the marine ecosystem within a blue economy, we often talk about direct services, which often translate to economic benefits. So, for example, if I think about aquaculture, I think about fish, or if I think about fisheries, I think about fish, and the price per landing or the price per fish that will be able to generate, how many jobs are going to be generated by fishing, and the infrastructure, how much money that could contribute to the local economy. So those are all thoughts and processes that are going on when we think about direct ecosystem services. But what is often not considered are indirect ecosystem services, which don't necessarily have a price. The marine ecosystems, which provide a lot of indirect benefits, include salt marshes and mangroves and blue forests or kelp forests. Like all of these ecosystems, which are kind of, they are unique in any way possible, and they are just so interesting, and you will find so many different creatures living in them. A lot of these ecosystems are estuaries. They are a great place for biodiversity and for little creatures and for growing and maturing of some of the younglings, to put it bluntly, so as in like small fish and small crabs and all of that. They would kind of hide in these areas because they allow for that. When we think about indirect ecosystem services, those are services that are naturally occurring, but that may not necessarily have, if we think about a salt marsh or a kelp forest, all of them are unique ecosystems that sequester carbon or blue carbon. And that, of course, is important when we think about climate change and climate change targets and net zero and all of that. So these ecosystems are uniquely important to help us achieve the net zero climate change targets. The contentious part there, though, is so we have the direct ecosystem services, which often translate to direct economic benefits. And then we have indirect ecosystem services that don't necessarily translate to economic benefits, even though they have huge benefits for the environment, for the humans that are living in these areas, for the health and well-being of the people, as well as for the ocean in general. They are great regulators that way. The contentious part then becomes when we are managing marine ecosystem services based on direct services, as in trying to get rid of these indirect ecosystem services so we can directly benefit from the services and then rather have like aquaculture there, or, you know, or rather get rid of these ecosystem services so we can build a bigger port, but by building the bigger port, we're also eliminating a lot of these indirect services. So it is a very contentious part, and it is a very difficult part to manage, because on the one hand, you don't want to get rid of something that is naturally mitigating climate change effects, but yet we are also in a situation where we do need more jobs and where we do need employment opportunities, as well as economic or regional development. It needn't necessarily be economic entirely, because I think that is another part that we need to be careful of. Regional development doesn't necessarily translate to always being an economic regional development. Regional development could also just mean that things are improving and they're changing, and people are living in better living situation, having a better livelihood or better access to livelihood and clean water and all of that. That doesn't necessarily mean that there is an economic benefit to it. But if we spin that a little bit longer, there will indirectly or eventually be some economic benefit to that, but that shouldn't be the overall goal. Where it does become difficult, though, is when we're trying to put a value on these marine ecosystem services, which is easily done when it's an when it's a direct ecosystem service. We have all of our structures in place that tell us then the direct economic benefits of something. But with the indirect ecosystem services, we're still trying to understand what kind of mechanisms we can use to actually value or put a value onto these services. Now, I'm not saying that there is an economic value of these services, but we need to understand their importance. And unfortunately, the way our structure works at the moment, it is by measuring it economically or measuring it through numbers, and thereby kind of saying, well, if you, for example, if you leave a certain amount of an ecosystem service, an indirect one, like a salt marsh, and you don't touch it and you leave it there, then it can capture an X amount of carbon. And when it captures that X amount of carbon, that translates then to X amount of euros or dollars or whatever currency you want to use. And therefore, I can then say, well, whatever economic benefit you get from a direct ecosystem service, do they match that indirect ecosystem service in terms of carbon capture and in terms of the value that you would get from not touching? The question, though, is how do you protect these areas? How do you manage them? And can you replant ecosystem services? Like, can you replant a salt marsh? Can you replant a mangrove? The answer is yes, you can. But there is research that shows that these newly planted or these very young ecosystems, like young mangrove systems, capture far less carbon than older established ecosystems. And that comes back to, the process behind it and, the growth and the size of it and just the health of the ecosystem. So it becomes a very challenging question for coastal managers and for anybody living in the area. Like, how do you protect coastal ecosystems? How do you do that? How can you actually tell the story? And how can you make somebody else see why having an untouched mangrove or an untouched kelp forest is so important? And of course, it's the biodiversity. I think we all enjoy that. If you go snorkel and you look down and you see all kinds of fish and crabs and all of that, it's very enjoyable and it's amazing. Like, I could do that for hours, but my experience is obviously very different from other people's experience, meaning that my understanding of what I see and how I perceive it will be very different from other people. One of the ways of showing the importance of ecosystems is precisely through activities like that, public awareness. The other importance is also finding a way of translating the indirect ecosystem services into a language that is understandable for anybody. And that may be an economic benefit one. So, as I mentioned, trying to explain carbon capture into numbers and, cap and trade and all of those mechanisms that are used to carbon trade. Interestingly enough, and I hope I've read a lot about this idea of biodiversity trading, and I don't mean as in, I give you a piece of land if you give me a piece of whale. I don't mean that. But what I mean is understanding your own biodiversity and this mechanism of, well, if one country can actually show that they're protecting their biodiversity and that they are doing everything in their power and they're monitoring and making sure that they are looking after their own biodiversity as much as possible, they can show through that how much carbon they've captured, and that is in calculations of the biodiversity. Therefore, it would be easier for them to show that they're in a better standing for carbon trading. That's a very roundabout way of saying the more biodiversity you have. For example, a whale is actually capturing a lot of carbon, and that's why whales are so important as a part of biodiversity and, for our health and for our ocean's health. But they're at the moment not utilized within the carbon trading scheme. So if you can kind of understand the indirect services of marine cetaceans such as whales, then you could show then there would be a direct economic benefit from that by ways of how we calculate carbon and carbon capturing now. To be honest, a lot of these things are so complicated to me, and trying to understand them and trying to explain them in a way that makes sense, it can be very challenging. But I think in essence, what I want to say is that marine ecosystem services are super important. There is a lot of them, and I only touched like the surface of what kind of ecosystem services there are. I know I went into aquaculture as my number one example, but obviously there was direct ecosystem services from marine energy and, renewable energy, and there's a lot of, biotechnology. Like, those direct ecosystem services are amazing. You can see them in medicine, and you can see them in health and all kinds of products. That is just so cool to see and so cool to, be able to witness. Indirect ecosystem services are amazing. Like, I love them because of what they can do and how resistant and how resilient they are. Because the health of marine ecosystems directly translates to resilience building and well-being of people living in a coastal area. If you don't have any indirect ecosystems in the area, there is a high chance that the ecosystem is unhealthy, and therefore the people living in that area may not be in a good position. And that is not what we want. We're in a time and place where sustainable development is our number one goal as a society and as a global society. And it's not only a right, but it's also a challenge that we all have to rise to. And it's also a obligation for us to do that. So, with that said, I hope I was able to shed some light on marine ecosystem services. If you do have any questions, if you do have any concerns, if I botched the explanation completely, please let me know. I'm happy to have a discussion about marine ecosystem services, and I hope you have a lovely week, and I speak to you next week. If you want to engage with me on social media, follow me on Twitter at Jess_explores. Or follow me on Instagram at Jess_explores_podcast.